outside pressures or interventions. But once a year, we do an open house, and we like to invite the community in to see some of the work that happens at the colony and sort of experience for themselves the retreat and what it's like and some of the magic that happens there. And so we have open studios, we have art for show and for sale, and we also have wine and food and music and dance. It's a pretty full evening.
How many open studios are there?
There are going to be three studios that are fully open, and then our whole main house, which is sort of the public space for the residents of the colony, will be full of art from current, past, future residents.
And how many applications do you get every year for residences?
It's different each year, and interestingly, it's been going up pretty steadily over the last 6 years. This year, we had almost 800 applications for about 50 spots. So it's very rigorous competition, and luckily, we have juries set up for each of the areas that we work with, and the juries are amazing. They spend so much time with each application. It's all anonymous. And they really pore over them and discuss them and make the choices they make.
How long does a residency go for, generally speaking?
We have offered for years month-long residencies, and that includes a bedroom, you know, a private bedroom, a private studio, and all your meals. We have a chef who cooks the dinners, and then the breakfast and lunches are sort of done individually. And that's always been 4 months, and then this year we are starting a new program that will be open to application for our 2012 season, where we'll be offering 2-week residencies, and we'll also be offering a residency to organizations, so publishing collectives, galleries, musical groups, or just collaborating artists can come and spend a week at the colony and do a collaborative project. So those are 2 new initiatives.
How long has the colony actually been in existence as a place for residencies?
It was founded in 1973 by the sister of Edna St. Vincent Millay, on whose property the colony is situated. And it's been sort of evolving since then. It started off as a very small thing with 3 or 4 artists at a time, and it's been getting bigger and bigger and going longer and longer. And that's pretty much how that's worked.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
Well, let's see. We also have workshops at the colony. We call them workshop retreats. And they're 4 or 5 days long, and those are also open to the public. Folks can apply for them. If people live locally and just want to come for the day, they can do that, or they can come up and have a bedroom and a studio of their own and spend 5 days at the colony. We've done 2 so far this year. One was a writing workshop and one was an art-making workshop. And they both were really successful. People loved them. And, you know, we try and work with artists who are really dedicated to teaching, mm-hmm. so that the workshop is more than just a chance to hang out and make work. It's a chance to really soak up an extraordinary experience with somebody who loves to, you know, guide someone through the conversation around the art that they're making.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, who do you have teaching these workshops?
This year we had Nina Cacciadorian, who's a really interesting artist based in New York. She runs the Registry of Emerging Artists at the Drawing Center, and she was showing at the Sarah Meltzer Gallery for years, and her work has been, you know, shown pretty widely. It's been at Mass MoCA and other places that, you know, are local, but also all over the world. She was just in New Zealand, and she's been all over. And we had Tisa Bryant do a writing workshop. She's a published critic and writer, and she's teaching at CalArts, and she flew in to do the workshop. And these are both people who are not only really, really interesting as contemporary artists, but people who are just, you know, dedicated to teaching and to sort of expanding how people talk about the work that they make and think about the work that they make. So it's really been fun, and we offer scholarships for people who can't pay the full tuition, and, you know, we've always had a really interesting mix of folks who come to the workshop.
And these workshops are for any level?
Any level, yeah. We do ask people to send in a work sample, just so we can sort of get a feel for where people are coming from, but so far none of the artists we've contacted about teaching a workshop has stipulated that they only want to work with advanced practitioners. Everyone's been very open. And I've sat in on a few of the workshops we've done, and I can say that, you know, you can sort of enter them at different levels. You know, they're small enough, and the teachers are sort of broad-minded enough that you can really have any different kind of engagement with what they're doing.
Has any great works of art or great pieces of literature come out of these residencies?
Well, yes.
Do tell.
Many, many. And, you know, we've had so many artists. We've had almost 2,000 artists since we were founded come through the colony that I would hesitate to, you know, distinguish one or two as being the best or the greatest works of art that ever came out of the Malay colony. But I can say that there are a lot of published books of all different kinds, you know, nonfiction, poetry, fiction. There's a lot of music. There's a lot of different kinds of visual art, from photography to sculpture to conceptual art to painting to drawing to illustrating, that probably wouldn't have come into existence if, you know, the person in question hadn't had the time to really, you know, either initiate a project, revise a project, finish off a project. You know, people come in at all different phases of their work. There's been a lot of different work that's come out of the colony over the years, and we have a list of the artists who've been at the colony on our website, so, you know, if people wanted to sort of, and a lot of them have web pages of their galleries or their publishers, so you can sort of get a sense of the kind of work that's been happening over the years
I think you also have books on display there, don't you, also from past residents?
We do. We have books and we have some, you know, pieces of art. We don't ask people to leave us, you know, we don't ask for a donation or an artwork when people leave, but every now and then people send books or, you know, send a small painting, and so we have, at this point, a pretty big display of books and drawings and paintings. We have lots of CDs. And actually, we're going to have a display, not in addition to the work that'll be on exhibit at the colony, we're going to be selling some original artworks and books and CDs. So there will be a lot to check out on Saturday, too.
You'll also have some musicians performing, is that correct?
Yes, we have. And one of the composers who spent time with us this year, John Colpitz, who's a drummer, who's in a few different bands, including a Japanese band that has toured a lot. We asked him to curate the music for us for the open house on Saturday, and he put us in touch with two women performers. They call themselves Christy and Emily, which is their first name. And one of them is classically trained. The other one is, you know, sort of autodidact through the indie rock scene, and they make music together that's pretty amazing. It's got a really wide range of influences. So they're going to be playing at the colony, and John will be there, and maybe he'll step in and play with them for a bit.
And I see that there's also going to be ambient dance performance.
We coined that phrase.
What can we expect from ambient dance?
Well, because we're outside, we're having the, you know, the all the performance outside, we ask the dancers to kind of dance around us so that we're not going to be sitting in chairs watching a dance performance. They'll be dancing both kind of improvisationally and a piece that they've been rehearsing on the meadow around us as we watch or don't watch, you know, given the mood that strikes, for about an hour during the open house.
And I guess that that meadow is maybe 200 yards long between the barn and the house, something like that, so it's a fairly large area.
It is. I'm pretty bad at estimating actual size, but it's really big. We always have a tent, about, you know, 150 people come, and there's plenty of room outside that tent.
And to top it off, there is going to be all sorts of organic food from local producers.
There is, yeah. We have, I don't know if you've ever eaten the delicious homemade sausages from Fleischer's, grass-fed and organic meats in Kingston, but they're like old-fashioned artisanal butchers, and they work with local farmers. They only use local meats, and they make their own sausages, and so we got a wonderful contribution. They contributed sausages to our open house, and we're going to be cooking them up, and we have baked goods from Hawthorne Valley Farm, which is the biodynamic farm about 12 miles from us in Ghent. And we're also going to be having the hard cider from Hudson Chatham Winery and wines from Hudson Wine Merchants. So we are really working closely with the local purveyors.
And so the ultimate aim is really just to give the general public an insight into what goes on at a residency. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, we also hope to, you know, we use revenue from the open house to support our residency program.
Right.
We don't usually make a huge amount of money. That's not, you know, the driving force behind the event, but it's mm-hmm. certainly a nice collateral advantage.
Yeah. It does seem as if residencies in general are becoming more popular because lots of either academic institutions or other artistic institutions offer them.
It's true. I think because, you know, it's a more and more difficult economy for artists. You know, there are less and less opportunities to support yourself solely as an artist, you know, whether through sales of your work or grants or, you know, situations that make it easy to be a person who spends most of their time making art. So most artists do something else. You know, they work a day job, they're in academia, you know, there's something else that they're doing to support themselves. And so the more that that happens, the more that people have to sort of step outside their daily life and find a space that's solely for them to make their work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially, you know, we're sort of in the megalopolis area here with Boston and New York and Philadelphia and a lot of really expensive, fast-paced cities. It's really important for artists to have an environment like the Malay Colony where, you know, the cell phone may or may not work, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's not internet in your bedroom, you know, and it's really just a time to read, to write, to make art, to listen to music.
No internet, huh? How do people cope with no internet? I mean, it's become such a necessity these days.
Well, we have internet in the public spaces. So, you know, people have to sort of downgrade from 24/7 to select times during the day where they bring their internet into the public room. And so people are checking email, you know. There are frequent vows. I'm not bringing my laptop into the, you know, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to be off email all month. And that usually collapses on day three. But it's a discrete amount of time. You know, when they're working in their studios, they don't have internet, so that's a big difference.
The other thing that residencies have a reputation for is sparking romances. Has there been any great romances that you can tell us about that has come out of this?
There have been. You know, in my time at the Malay Colony, which is about 6 years, there have been, you know, we don't always know the staff what's going on. So there have probably been, for everything that I know about, one or two or three or four that I don't know about. But there were, you know, two or three, I'd say, over the 6 years that I've been at the Colony. But the most romantic story I heard was a woman who had been at the Colony in the 90s, and she came back 3 years ago, and we keep a big journal that the residents use while they're at the Colony, so people write in it, they put photos in it, they draw in it, you know, they put little souvenirs in it. And so she had been at the Colony in the 90s and had this great love affair that dissolved eventually. And when it dissolved, the man she was with said to her, you know, I left you something in that journal. And so she came back in 2007, I think, and went through all the journals and found what he'd written to her.
Oh, how romantic.
Isn't it? I know, and it was apparently something very lovely. So that's probably the big romance of my tenure.
Are people coming from far and wide to be residents?
Yeah. I mean, certainly all over the States. I mean, there's, you know, a hefty percentage from the Northeast. But certainly we get people from all over the States, and we get, you know, every year we get a certain percentage, maybe 10-15% of our applications from overseas, you know, mostly from Europe, but last year we had someone from Thailand, and we had someone from Iceland a couple of years ago, so we've had people from, you know, it's not the majority of the applications, but it's definitely represented.
Mm-hmm. Are the grounds of the Malay House open to the public at this point, across the road from you?
Well, I mean, the house and grounds that were, you know, where Malay lived and where she had her notorious swimming pool with the naked parties and the bar and
the bullet hole and the bar and all.
Exactly. So all that juicy stuff is not part of the Malay colony. We have a sort of cousin organization which is completely separate as a 501c3 not-for-profit. That administers and looks after her house and grounds, and that's the Malay Society at Steepletop. And so folks can get tours of the house, and they also have different public programs at the Malay Society, but they're a separate organization.
So your event on Saturday, there won't be any nudity then?
Well, I can't promise. Anything could happen.
Just to give our, you know, listeners something to maybe look forward to.
That's an
added incentive to go.
Listeners out there, if you come, I promise beautiful nudity.
Beautiful and tasteful nudity.
That's right. The
with
flowers
beautiful and tasteful
strip.
People.
There'll be some naked birds flying around.
Oh, lovely. How well known is Edna St. Vincent Millay these days? Does she go in and out of fashion?
I don't feel like, you know, there are certain writers who have, for various reasons, really had resurgences of popularity. You know, certainly there are a lot of prose writers who suddenly catch the attention of Hollywood, and there'll be a spate of Jane Austen movies, or there'll be a bunch of Edith Wharton movies, or, you know, suddenly these writers get this huge burst of new attention, and I feel like Emily Dickinson is a poet who has been, you know, talked about in all different ways through, you know, since she died. There have been different ways of reading her and talking about her. And that has not been my experience of Edna St. Vincent Millay. I mean, certainly there has been critical writing about her work, and there have been biographies of her, and there have been, you know, different ways of sort of bringing her work into the world, but my sense is that she is not a writer who's had one of those, you know, huge bursts of popularity. I mean, she was very popular when she was live. You know, she was a Pulitzer Prize winner. She was a very public and acclaimed woman in all kinds of ways, not least of which because she was a sort of flamboyant and charming and ethical personality, you know, very political, very activist. But she has not had that kind of reinvestigation that I've seen with other writers. And, you know, it may be in front of us. It may be that she is, you know, a writer who is sort of her time and doesn't have that kind of resurgence. But certainly there is a continued interest in her work.
What would you say is her most well-known or famous work?
Well, there's that, you know, I would say probably her sonnets are the most quoted. I'm not a scholar of her work, so I don't know, you know, for example, which of her theater pieces have been performed most or which of her poems have been republished most often. But if I had to guess offhand, I would say the sonnets.
Right. I have to say my favorite piece by her is My candle burns at both ends, it will not last the night, but ah, my foes and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light.
That's probably the most popular. Yeah, it's amazing. Have you ever heard recordings of her reading?
I don't think so, no.
She has incredible voice, you know, really. I mean, she was also a theater person, so she has a really, like the voice of a stage actress, and it's really amazing to listen to her.
Oh. Well, can people access such recordings on the website?
Not the Malay Colony website. Again, the colony is sort of separate from the estate. Mm-hmm. But the Malay Society, I don't think there are recordings on their website, but certainly they're a resource for where you can get them. I mean, I hesitate on the radio to toss off some guess about where you could get them, but there are any number of online websites that have all different kinds of recordings of poetry from the last, you know, since recordings were made. And I'm sure you can find her work online.
Okay.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the event this weekend, Caroline?
Well, let's see. You can, if you're interested in buying tickets, you can visit our website, which is www.milletcolony.org. And right on our homepage, there's a link to the ticket, the page where you can buy tickets. Or you can call us at 518-392-4144. And, you know, it's good to let, we do sell tickets at the door on the day of, but it's nice to let us know ahead of time just so we know who we're going to be welcoming with open arms at 5 o'clock on Saturday, July 23rd.
Thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you guys so much. It's been lovely to chat with you.
Yes, thanks, Caroline. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.